Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year coming up. We are going to be having Reginald Clemens calling in a few minutes. He's going to be doing his show. As many of you know, we've been having problems with the studio, with the technical difficulties with the radio show, and they've been working on it all week. There is a sign that currently says that they are still experiencing an issue with the live broadcast system. However, we're able to get this on the road today. We tested it earlier, and it should be okay. If not, I want everyone to know if anything goes wrong during his radio show that there has been an issue that they are working on. I hope all of you are enjoying your holiday. I hope you're all with your families. And those of you who are not, I know many of you, many of us, have loved ones that cannot be with us. But at the same time, we have our Creator with us. We're celebrating the birth, the celebration of the Christ Jesus, who gave his life as a ransom sacrifice, so that all of us will have that salvation someday when this system of things ends. I don't know if you will be hearing this today or if you will be hearing it after the holiday, but I just want to wish all of you a happy Merry Christmas and an upcoming Happy New Year. Let's hope next year, this upcoming year, is better than the ones that we've had so far these past couple of years. Okay, Reginald is late calling in, but what he is going to be and his team will be talking about, and that is going to be on the reentry, 2030 reentry. And that's him now. Hold on one second, please.
Hello, this is a free call from
Reginald Clemens.
An offender at the Jefferson City Correctional Center
is called from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded. To accept this free call, press.
Well, thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Okay, audience, welcome Reginald Clemens and his team working on Reentry 2030. Reginald, you are now on the air.
Hello, how are you doing? This is Reginald Clemens. I'm a facilitator, mentor. I'm training to be a facilitator in the Reentry 2030 program. And I'd like people to call in if they have any questions or comments. And if you would like to donate to contribute to helping to make these phone calls happen, you can donate to hashtag RC Redemption. That's hashtag RC Redemption. Today we have Rice Hill, who's going to be speaking on his perspective and understanding and view about Reentry 2030 and what it is that he sees and understands about the program from a young man's perspective, because I'm 52 years old, and sometimes I feel my age, sometimes I don't. And today, I feel pretty good, and I want to wish everybody happy holidays. A young man got beaten to death by guards 2 weeks ago, and maced him to death also. They sprayed mace in his mouth and put a spit mask over his face and waterboarded him to death with mace. Sprayed mace all over the spit mask and had him wrapped up in a blanket where he couldn't move. His name was Ardell Moore. It's been in the news, and I don't think that they're willing to release the video of what happened, and people need to really, really take a look at that. That's the sad news, and that's one of the reasons I fight so hard in this program, Reentry 2030, to try and help people get out of prison and stay out of prison, because this isn't a place for a person to live and strive to survive. You can't live in a place like this. Life is about living and enjoying the pleasures of life. When you're in prison, the only thing you're trying to do is trying to survive. And I don't think people really understand how horrible prison conditions are when it comes to how staff treat prisoners and how we're neglected and abused by staff. And a lot of people, when they think about how the horrors of prison, they only think about what prisoners do to prisoners, and that's not the biggest threat. A lot of women who work in the prison system will tell you that they're more afraid of their co-workers than they are of the prisoners. They feel safer with the prisoners than they do with their male co-workers. And without going too far off, and that's what it is we're trying to create criminal justice reform for, is to get away from that beastified and bestiality mentality that subjugates us to animalistic behaviors and animalistic treatment. And we encourage one another to treat one each other like human beings and hold each other to a higher standard in reentry 2030, earn one another for release from prison. Because each one teach one in this peer-to-peer program. And that's the thing that I enjoy the most about this program. It's an opportunity to help somebody elevate their consciousness and elevate their humanity. And without further ado, I'd like you all to get an opportunity to listen to Bryce Hill and ask him any questions that might intrigue you. Period.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Hello? How you doing? My name is Bryce Hill. Hello?
My
name is Jonathan.
You are on the radio show. Speak your piece.
All right. I apologize. How you doing? My name is Jonathan Bryce Hill.
Do you have something to say, or do you want to put Reginald back on so he can do his show?
No, ma'am. I'm just giving you a little insight and perspective from the program that we're doing up here for reentry 2030.
That's what the audience is waiting to hear from you.
Yes, ma'am. And with the program, what it is, we're trying to prepare a lot of the young men to integrate back into society. And what we do is we separate them from the rest of the prison, and we have a curriculum set up. A program that we have set up for a lot of the youth, and they have to go through this program before they go back out to society. And we have classes, morality classes, character classes, responsibility classes, classes that teach them how to fill out bills, how to apply for credit, how to open a bank account, anything to integrate for them to become citizens back in the society. We have, we're going through a stage now where a lot of the youth are coming to a stage of enlightenment. And when you go through that enlightenment, you start to become conscious of a lot of our old beliefs. We begin to question. And we have challenge classes that we create to where we have difficult questions that we like to present to the floor, and we give people the opportunity to answer it. For when they be out in society and they may encounter a challenge and they don't know how to tackle it in society. This is something that we're trying to create for the entire Missouri Department of Correction, because it's something that the youth need. And with me, I'm only 33. I'm at the age of 33, but I'm seeing how the world is changing and how everything around us is changing. And we're just trying to continue to create a positive and productive system for our children.
Can you talk a little bit more about the program that you do, that you're working on?
Hello?
Yes.
The other day, right, when it comes to this Reentry 2030 program, and dealing with youth and dealing with people who are being released from prison, I just seen an expose on CNN where on CNN, Lala Anthony, Carmelo Anthony's wife, she was doing, she's running a reentry program out of Rikers Island. And a lot of the people had a lot of positive things to say about the reentry program at Rikers Island. The young men that were being educated and going through the process of understanding their criminality and understanding how they can hold themselves accountable and be better men. Well, I'd like to reach out to people like Lala Anthony and any other professionals out there to help us with this program. And because we really, really need to grow in advance as much as we possibly can. Bryce Hill has something else he'd like to say and address.
Hello. Furthermore, we're also trying to teach our people about their rights, because we come into this penal system and we hire attorneys and we ask them to represent us, and we don't have no clue about what it is that they're searching for. We don't know what our rights is. We don't know the difference between our citizenship, between a state citizenship, between a federal citizenship, what kind of protections that they come with. What does this status quo even represent? What's the difference between a 14th Amendment citizenship? What's the difference between a 5th Amendment citizenship? Our people don't know these kind of things. And these are the kind of things that we're trying to teach our people so that when they do get back out there in society, they won't end up in this position that they already in. We want to prepare our people for the best future that we possibly can.
Can I add something to that?
Yes, ma'am.
One of the things is a lot of people don't know, and we do extensive research anyway, but a lot of times if there's universities across the country in every state, I'm sure in Missouri as well, that have law schools, and they have students, they have clinics that work with prisoners or that work on prisoners' cases, and a lot of people are not aware of this. So I would just want to mention that if family members or friends or whomever can go on the internet and type in law schools, they actually work with prisoners, and some of them, they go over their trial transcripts for errors to see if there were any errors. Some of them work on civil rights violations, and there's a lot of different appellate, criminal justice. There's also a lot of, a lot of prisoner advocacy organizations out there that work on other things, and ACLU is not very helpful at all, even though they say on their website they do a lot for prisoners. I haven't seen it in my 25 years of advocacy work. But also I tell everyone to, when looking for lawyers, always put pro bono lawyers, pro bono or free lawyers, because we have a lot of indigent people incarcerated. So pro bono criminal justice lawyers, pro bono civil rights lawyers, pro bono appellate lawyers, pro bono whatever the case may be, criminal defense, whatever the case may be. So they're not completely without any kind of resources at all. It's just a matter of trying to do the research to find the appropriate ones and the ones that are not just trying to look good on their websites, but actually helping incarcerated. What you and the rest of the guys are doing, I think, is very, and I want to say I'm really sorry to hear about that incarcerated individual that died, whether it was alleged suicide or whatever the case may be. We know that a lot of this happens in the U.S. prisons as well, the penal system. So what you guys are doing is awesome. And when people come out of prison, what they want to also do is, or prior to, is look up on the internet transitional housing or supportive aftercare resources for incarcerated, soon-to-be-released or formerly incarcerated individuals in whatever state you're in. Whenever typing anything like that, you always want to put the state you're looking for the help in. But there's resources out there, and that's what we want to do, is try to get those the information out. We have a caller, 323. You want to state your name, please?
Leona, I am glad you've got a show on Christmas, because that gives me the opportunity to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you. I've been having problems with the radio show all week. I had to cancel several shows last week.
From a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
And we're taking the chance this week to allow Reginald Clemens from Missouri, wrongfully convicted, and his team, who are working on the reentry 2030. So we're going to allow, and the one that's speaking right now, do you want to state your name again, please?
My name is Janet DeWarzale.
I'm sorry, what was it?
Jonathan,
thank you so much, Jonathan. We're going to let you go on with what you were saying, but I just wanted to let everyone know there's resources out there. When typing in the internet, for the resources. You want to type in supportive aftercare resources or pro bono legal assistance. You want to type in the type of lawyer looking for. But a lot of people are not aware of these things. But they always want to, when they do these things, they always want to put the state that they're looking for the help in. So, Jonathan, we'll let you continue.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank
okay,
you so much.
Okay. But now with the reentry program, you know, a lot of times in our communities that we've grown up in, we've encountered a lot of abuse and a lot of trauma growing up. And in our household, the things that we've encountered, we was always taught, so what happens in a household stays in a household. So we used to hold a lot of those trauma and a lot of them problems in. And we never had an avenue or an outlet on how to express it. And majority of us used to express ourselves through violence, and that was our form of communication. And now that we're in here, and when I present my problems and my issues to the table, I see how so many more people have encountered the same thing, and they never had an individual to communicate with, to tell them what they've been going through. A lot of us had a lot of these problems. We just never had nobody to talk to about them. We never knew that it was okay for us to be able to speak about them. We thought that these things were supposed to be secrets. But now that we're growing and we're unfolding, it's okay for us to speak about them, and now that we have an avenue for us to speak about them, it's like letting the weight off your world. It's like getting the weight of the world off your shoulders. And a lot of these individuals that are having on them, they just don't have nobody to talk to, or they don't feel comfortable enough to be able to speak about it. So with me coming from where I come from, it's a level of relatability with the youth.
I'm glad that you and the others are trying to work with the younger generation, because I will say something about this country. You mentioned that things were taught in the home
Can I interrupt for a second, Leona? I just wanted to say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you, to Jonathan, and now I'll get off and let you get back to the show. So
okay,
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
I want to wish you a happy, Merry Christmas, Joe, and thank you for calling in. We truly appreciate you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And what I was going to say is Jonathan and others, and I want the audience to hear this because they, too, know in their own household that they probably have been taught to keep a lot of things behind closed doors as well. And unfortunately, what it does, it ends up causing problems in their household with their children. And a lot of times the upbringing of other children can destroy people who are bringing their children up correctly. But as you mentioned, hiding everything under the carpet is something that everyone in this country does. And when they do get exposed, like our current and our former president, they seem to manage to get away with it. This has been going on for years. The taxpayers' dollars are being wasted on trying to bring justice to two parties, and it hasn't happened yet. So that's why I want to say what you're talking about, what you and the rest of the men are doing with these younger generation in the prisons, and hopefully we'll have people on the outside taking heed and doing the same thing. You're the role model that is needed.
I have a question that I'd like to ask Rysel. Now, back in the 80s, when I was growing up, there was a lot of different negative influences than what is encountered today. And my understanding, a lot of things are a whole lot more intense, and the influences dig a lot deeper because of the internet and social media and everything. I would like him to explain, if he would, how some of those negative influences affected him when he was out there as a teenager, a young man, because those influences are some of the things that we face today when we're trying to figure out how to reach our children and how to reach young teenagers and young men. Because the influences are different, and understanding what it is that we're up against and what it is that we're trying to strategize against is absolutely crucial. And that's one of the reasons we have young men like him as part of the Reentry 2030 program.
Well, for one, as a child, you know, as a child, your brain is like a sponge, and everything you see, it just latches on to it. And that you need somebody to usher you in. So when we look at the role models growing up in my community, you know, the things that I've seen from the lifestyle, when it came from the women, the cars, the clothes, of course, those are the things I wanted. But in my community, we had different ways of getting it. So the things I've seen, it came from drugs or violence or doing, being able to obtain these things from illegal gangs or from being able to play sports. But I couldn't play sports, and this was the only thing that, and the drugs and the violence was, that was the only avenue that I had that was presented to me in order for me to be able to obtain a car, some clothes, and a woman. And throughout my life and in my and within the community, it was negative influence after negative influence after negative influence, because whatever, 9 times out of 10, whatever it is you see was presented in front of you, whatever it is you project to a child, then that's what the child's going to become. And that's all people in my community seen growing up. When we encounter those kind of things, we never really looked at it as being illegal or wrong. We just thought it was a way to justify our means because of
you
the
have
community
1 minute left.
That we grew up in. Like Tupac said, he said we were just working with the scraps that we was given. So the things that was presented in front of us, we would just take them and we'd start creating from them. And we were just being creative, not understanding, not knowing what kind of path that it's going to lead to until you get to the end of that road and you understand that everything that I've learned up until now was negative or was a manifest error of thinking. This phone's going to hang up. But and now we have the opportunity to talk about it, to speak about it, to say the thing that's on our mind, to speak about some of the things that we've encountered, to get it off our chest, to dissect it and to speak and say how it affected us then and to say how it is affecting us now. And the more and more that we speak about it, the more and more people that looks like me, that's around my same age.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
They will be calling back in. Unfortunately, this is how things go with people incarcerated trying to either talk about the good that they're trying to do or talk about the issues that they're trying to endure. But they're willing to call back, and it as Reginald Clemens did say, it's costly for them, in Missouri especially. We know that every state is different in the way they operate their prisons. And unfortunately, Missouri is one of the more difficult, as well as Texas and Florida, are more difficult states to deal with when people are trying to get their message out. But we will have them coming back on with us in a few minutes now. You may start the conversation now.
Hello? You may start the conversation now. Oh, okay. This is me again. This is John Smart. This is getting called back in. Just explaining some of the influence and how some of the things influence, especially with social media that's going on in the world today. That's one of the greatest influences. Actually, that is the greatest influence of today, of the world, of the time. And a lot of leaders, and especially within the Asiatic community, that we need more leaders because of the influence that we're having on our youth today. And we need more positive influences that we have on the youth today. And the thing about it is, with the influence, it's about who has the money now. The finances, who looks better when it comes with the influence. So now it's the people, it's the ones that's influencing all people. It's how they're influencing them now. It's all about the finances. It's all about the finances. And keeping your front up. That's literally what it's about now. It's all about the finances and keeping your front up. And that's where the people are going to turn their perception to. Whoever can keep their fronts up the most. Whoever can make it look the best. And that's what's going on in the world today. That's what's taking place in the world today, right now. When you look at right now, when you look at John Morant, right?
you got a young Asiatic guy, the face of the NBA, who comes from Asiatic communities, and he has a spotlight on him, and yet they always catch him doing something negative or doing something bad with pistols, running around with guns, when you are the face of the NBA. I have children that look up to him. My sons love him. They love him, but we need more positive leaders. We need more positive leaders in our communities willing to step up. But ain't nobody trying to pay attention if we ain't got the finances to keep our fronts up. It's about finances for us. That's what we need right now, finances and unity.
I'd like to say one thing. When Jesus came into this world, he came into this world as a nobody, although he could have been an anybody. We have a society in this country that everybody wants to look good. Everyone wants to do the thing that's going to make them look the best. We have celebrities, we have athletes, we have entertainers, we have all these people that could use some of their little bit of money to try to do something about prison reform, to try to do something about making the prisoners better, trying to help the incarcerated population. But that's not good enough for them. They want to look good for everyone, so where is their money going? We have people in society that have money, but they don't have enough. They have to keep being so greedy, trying to get as much as they can. So they kind of like rub everybody's nose and kiss everyone's butts to continue to be looking good to everybody. When the Christ came into this world, people mocked him because he was doing what we all should be doing. This is Christmas. This is the time when everybody should be looking at what can we do to help the incarcerated population. We have mass incarceration in the United States of America, but where is everybody right now? Probably out drinking and having a good time, enjoying everybody's wealth and enjoying everybody's neighbor, rather than looking at how they can help the less fortunate, whether it be in this country or abroad. We have the Holy Land at war, when they're the ones that should be at peace right now. They're the ones that should be the role model for the world. And they're up there fighting back and forth amongst themselves. We have a society that we have to look at in this country that is terribly disgusting. And they should be helping those behind the prison walls, because we have mass incarceration. 2.3 million people incarcerated in the prisons and jails in the United States of America. And all they can think about is filling the prisons up more, so these big corporations can make more money. Well, we have people in prison that are rehabilitating themselves and trying to help others from the inside out, instead of us on the outside helping the ones on the inside. I watched on TV today where they were giving gifts to the children whose parents are incarcerated. The only gift that the kids would want is for them to try to help their parents to come out and be with their children and maybe help them to get the counseling or the rehabilitation they need, instead of getting all this money to claim, allege that they're helping the children of the incarcerated. This is a reality in this country. And unfortunately, the people of this country try to brush everything under the carpet, as you mentioned earlier. And it's your show. I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but I get very upset when we live in a society of people who want to do everything to make themselves look good. Volunteers, even volunteers out there, a lot of people think volunteers are doing the right thing. You know why they're volunteering? A lot of them are getting freebies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I took people. I used to take people as a social worker to the pantry to get food. And the people that were volunteering to give them food, that were giving them the food, had all the good stuff under the table that they were sitting at. And one of the people reached down to get something from under the table, and the volunteer jumped at her and said something. This is a volunteer that didn't want her own freebies to be taken by a person more in need. This is what we live in a society where everybody's patting one another on the back for the volunteer work that they do, forgetting that those people are also benefiting by the volunteer work that they're doing. Tell me about it. I'm going on 77 years old, people, in another month. I've been around. I've seen it. I've done it. I know about the hypocrites because I've been on both sides of the fence. We have an ignorant society that don't know enough about what they're doing, but they're running, they're leading the country, and they can't even get along with their own parties, never mind another party or the country. We got Republicans and Democrats like little children fighting back and forth amongst themselves, not wanting to do anything. And who's suffering? The people they're supposed to be leading while they're acting like children. And I hate to talk about these things because I get all riled up when I think about mass incarceration, when I think about the people in the streets, the homeless people, when I think about the children that are out there being abused and violated. And we have people in society that are too busy hiding their own bullshit underneath the carpet while they judge others.
Excuse me, y'all. I got a question for Jonathan Rice Hill. What is it that you feel reached you to get you to start turning the corner or thinking about turning your life around or looking more into what you understood to see a positive direction?
That's a good question. You know what? One day I was in Aztec and I felt lonely. I felt confused. And I just didn't, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do, and I prayed. I prayed, and I had a dream. And this man came to me and said, I want my faith back. And I said, yes, I would like my faith back. And it opened my eyes up to like a whole different field of reality, like a whole different field of perception. And I finally understood joy. I always wanted joy out of life, but I thought joy came from a material thing. And that's what I used to always search for, material things, until I realized that the most joy I get is when I can give joy to other people. It feels good to make other people feel good. And that's what makes me, that's when I'm my happiest, when I can make somebody else happy. It didn't come from anything. It didn't come from anything material. It just came from being able to help out the next person. Being able to do that, I wish everybody can experience life like this. And that's all I wish to do. And you know what? That happened to me at the age of 30. But 33 is when I started to notice it.
And maybe monitored and recorded.
When I noticed everything just started to change in an abrupt way, at the age of 33. And I just want to help people. I just want to help people. And I think all people should be able to experience it. It's like the touch of heaven.
Amen.
Touch of heaven.
Amen. Any questions?
Do you have any questions for me?
Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Do you have a question for me?
No, you know, as I said, once I get started, I get very upset because I see too much things, too much poverty, too much pain and sorrow and suffering going on in this country and around the world. And it just upsets me to think that there are so many people that can help make a difference. Like you just mentioned, it makes you feel good to help others. It makes me feel good to help others and Reginald and others. And if we had that all around the world, there wouldn't be any problems right now. There wouldn't be.
I have a question for Mr. Rice Hill. When it comes to coming to prison and everything, what is the thing that you lost that you value, that you lost the most? Because a lot of young people don't think about what it is that they're putting in jeopardy when they're out there in those streets doing their thing, so-called living their best life. And when we come to prison, a lot of times we realize what are some of the most valuable things in our life. And I'll share what it is that I feel is the most valuable thing that I lost after Mr. Rice Hill gets a chance to express himself.
It's like that's a double-edged sword right there. I've gained a lot since coming here, and I lost a lot. I've missed out on experiences with my children. I got three kids. And not being able to be there for Father Days, dances, and parent-teacher conferences. Or, you know, to guide my son through talking to his girlfriend. You know, I haven't been there physically for my children, you know, to watch them when they first get schools. You know, that pains me when you get on the phone with them and they got a problem. And you have to try to talk them through it, but you're not
being able to be there with them physically. You ain't able to provide that protection and that comfort that a father provides when he's there for his children physically. But I've gained a lot because my perception of a man has changed, because I thought I was a man when I was out there and providing for my children, because I paid bills. I went to work, had a house. You know, my kids ate, but I didn't have anything else to give them. I didn't have any substance. So I've learned a lot since being in her, because I've been around men, actual men that has been on the journey I've been on, have experienced the things I experienced, and have been able to guide me on my way. But like I said, it's like a gift and a curse, because if you take the time and you utilize it, you can become a better version of you. So I can see the good that I was able to gain even from my loss. I miss my children, but I have a lot more to give them when I come about it.
To add to that, when it comes to family, that's definitely something that I've personally lost. And like my mother used to count on me to put a Christmas tree every Christmas. And that's something that she had stopped doing for a lot of years after I got locked up, waiting on me to come home. And that's something that let me know the void that I had left behind. And I had lost a lot of respect from a lot of people who knew me growing up. And I had lost a lot of contact with people who were positive influences in my life. And I started realizing the people who loved and cared about me the most were the ones that was hurt the most by me coming to prison. And one of the things that I really, really lost the most is the ability to do anything for people in my family, and the ability to grow as a man and grow into a man and fulfill what I felt was my purpose in life and doing things when it comes to invention and growing in some type of way. And I had, and that's what it is that I've lost most, is the contact and the loving contact with the people that really cared about me, instead of the fake friends that I thought was friends. Never came to visit, never sent me money, never took my collect calls, and they just went on about their way, and they were the people that I was trying to impress the most, the people that cared about me the least, and the people that loved me the most, the people I was spending the least time with, and that's something that has shifted in my perspective, and has changed for me, because my value system has changed. But I've become a man in here, but I could have became a man in a better way. And by picking people who actually love and care about me as family and as brothers instead of friends and associates. And it goes, and some of the things go deeper than that, but that's the more general explanation. And I know there's a lot of young people out there who are trying to impress their friends. But I think young people need to remember that their friends are not as impressed. Just their friends are trying to impress them just as much as they're trying to impress their friends. So you got a bunch of young people out there trying to impress each other, doing stupid stuff. But who can do the most stupid thing? And I see that a lot when I hear about social media on TikTok and people trying to get attention and putting glue in their hair and all types of stuff to try and get attention and get people to look at what they can do. Another question that I have for Raisel is, now that he is conscious and he is aware and he is pointing himself in a positive direction, what is it he sees from his past that would be a stumbling block for him and a challenge for him now? Because that's something that's a challenge for the young men
that are leaving here today?
Good question. Well, Morse Sound has the same and the same
call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Is that the wise man that is often it changes his mind. And I didn't used to be open-minded. And I used to be closed-minded, and I would not accept instruction from other people because I thought I knew everything. And once I got something and I learned it, I would think that that was just it, and I would never try to go and learn more to it. I would never try to apply it. I didn't really like instruction, and I thought I had it all. I thought I knew every single thing, so couldn't nobody guide me until I went along, and I kept bumping my head along the way, and I realized I did need guidance. And once I went alone and I went on that journey, I see how I got to try to explain it to the youth that's coming up behind me to try to be open-minded and to accept guidance from somebody that probably went through the journey you on or experienced the same thing that you're experiencing because you can't do it all on your own. You can't do it all by yourself. You can't. You really can't, but I thought I could. I honestly thought I could. And now that I went through it and I bumped my head enough times and I gained the experience, I just take the experience that I got and I give it to the youth. I give it to the people that's coming up behind me.
And the second part to that question was, what was the stumbling block that you would see? If you can imagine it, because sometimes we get blindsided by temptation and stumbling blocks. That we didn't see. Because these young men are leaving here and they're going to run into those stumbling blocks out there in those streets, out there in society. And we have to try and prepare them for those stumbling blocks. I want to have to call back to get the answer to that question, which buys me some time to think about it a little bit more. All right. I'll call right back.
The caller has hung up.
Sorry, audience. I believe that they will be calling back in a few minutes. If everyone wants to hold on 1 second, and we will have Reginald Clemens and his team back on again. Again, it's Christmas time, and I hope that everybody will have a nice Christmas and will consider helping the less fortunate. I don't care if it's someone in the streets, in the prisons, wherever it may be. Try to do something positive. Try to do something positive so that you will be able to look good at yourself in the mirror. And here we go.
This is Jonathan Rice Hill. Here to answer the question. A stumbling block that I see. A stumbling block that I encountered a lot of times was failure. Was failure. And it's never really failure until you really give up. But if I would go out there and I would attempt to achieve something and I wasn't able to accomplish it, well, then it would put me into a defeatist moment or a defeatist attitude. And I feel like, well, maybe I'm not supposed to be doing that. Or I won't even attempt to try it again because of the fear of failure. And a lot of times when somebody tells us no or we don't excel at doing something, we just give up on it. And I did that a lot of times. There was a lot of opportunities, a lot of things that I could have done. The fear of failure would prevent me from putting my best foot forward and going out to get it accomplished. So for a lot of guys who are going out there, you may come across situations. There's no need to panic. You don't need to view it as being a conflict. You should accept it as it being a challenge. It should be something that you should take it on, that you should be able to conquer and overcome, and then set another challenge for yourself. Don't look at something as being a barrier. Always look at it as being a challenge. Don't look at it as being a stumbling block. Look at it as being a stepping stone. Something for me to step up and to step over with instead of allowing it to be something to hinder you. It's all about how you choose to perceive it. It's all about your perspective or the experience. And another thing is awareness. Awareness. We ask for things in life, and we go about life, and we get the opportunity to get it, but we don't be aware. We need to have a level of acute awareness to be able to obtain the blessings that we've been asking for. Because all throughout life, reality is going to present itself to you. Like, here you go. It's what you asked for. It's what you've been searching for. But we will become so consumed with our worldly desires and the things going on around us that we can't even see the blessings that's been presented right in front of us. So we need to take time out, and we need to deconstruct our minds and our thoughts and then let it flow effortlessly, and to start working on the things that we want to work on our creations, on our worlds, on our spheres of creativity. We need to plan, we need to strategize, and to go out there and to get it done. Because when we get out there in the real world, it's going to be a lot of distractions out there. So I say everybody needs to be prepared and aware. Prepared and aware. Prepared and aware. I like that. Prepared and aware.
You speak on being prepared and being aware, right? And one of the things I do know when it comes to planning and strategizing, plan is something that we put together that's not in action yet. And the strategy is something that's already in motion that we're putting together. Like reentry 2030 would be more of a strategy than it is a plan, because it's something that we're already doing.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
What is it that you think we would lose? Because the answer to this question answers two questions at the same time. What is it that you think we would lose if we didn't have reentry 2030? Because without reentry 2030, the rehabilitative efforts that we are doing through this peer-to-peer experience, we wouldn't have been able to develop into what it is that has evolved naturally and organically. So it answers the question also as far as what is it from your perspective that you feel reentry 2030 introduces to the prison environment after we separate prisoners from the regular prison environment into this wing where we try to create a different environment and different atmosphere from what prison normally is.
Reentry 2030 is sort of like a rebirth. You have people, you go throughout the prison society, you go in, this is like its own world, right? And then you come over to Reentry 2030. Reentry 2030 is really a rehabilitative program, because we actually focus on rehabilitating the individuals that come through the program. Like, we take time out and we talk with them individually to see the kind of problems that they had, what issues that they possess, and what it is they think that they need to work on. And we also start to create individualized plans for them. As far as with them working on their credit and them getting their driver's license, the career plans, everything we do here, we tailor it around rehabilitation, but we also tailor it around the clients as well. And you look in here, the tours and the facilitators, it's a bunch of us that has been in prison a while, that went through a lot and have already experienced a lot of things, and then some of us have already been out there. Like me, I had a career, I had a house, I had children, I had cars. So I know what the prison life is like, and I know what the productive life in society is like. So I can prepare a lot of individuals for society to see this, so that they can know what society is actually like. If they don't get this reentry, a lot of guys here, they never even pay the bill. They never even pay the bill. A lot of guys here, they don't have comprehension skills, so we have to prepare them for that. See, prison doesn't do those things for us anymore. Prison is not a rehabilitation place. It's just a center. It's a warehouse place for us. So we have to pick up the slack, and we have to do what we know is right for our people, because we come from those communities. And we know what we went through. We know what we need. We know the kind of love and care we need. So we just pick up the baton, and we just do what needs to be done.
We just look and see what needs to be done, and we get it done. Without reentry 2030, I don't think that the rehabilitative efforts here in Missouri, especially here in this institution, they would not be what it was at without reentry 2030. And I think that it needs to be in all the prisons, not just this. It needs to be in all the prisons because it's best to have people that have experience that have already went through the experience that can come back and show it to the youth and let them know, you don't have to go through this. This is the way to go now. See, enough of us have already went down that road and bumped our heads. That's where Reentry 2030 is. That's us coming from that road and letting the youth know you don't have to go down that road. This is the road we need y'all to go down now. This is the road that's best for us. If we don't have Reentry 2030, there wouldn't be no other road for us.
Yeah, I greatly appreciate his views and what it is that he just does from a different perspective. And he's another member of the team that I wanted you all to meet so that y'all can get an understanding of the variety of individuals and the variety of personalities and histories and experiences that we have. Because I'll say you have old guys and young guys in this reentry 2030 program that we're trying to help as they're being preparing to be released back into society, trying to help them make that transition in a less stressful way. Because one of the biggest things is the stressors that people deal with when the unknown of failure, the unknown of what is it I'm going to do when I get out of there. Some people don't even have a plan. They have a fantasy about what they're going to do when they get out there, but they don't really have a plan for owning a business. And if they're serious about owning a business, then we can give them that soft skills because there's individuals that are on the team of 21 facilitators and mentors at this point, who's on the team who have had their own businesses. And like Raisio was saying, he's had his own house. He's paid bills. And he's been able to get a credit line and had to keep up with credit and everything. Some of these young people who are coming up in here, they just jumped off the porch. In other words, they got locked up still living in their mama house. Or they got locked up after going into the streets for leaving for their mama house. They never had to pay no bills. It ain't never had no apartment or anything like that. They just grew up and they weren't raised. So they don't have any life experiences to take care of responsibilities. But yet, they sit up here in prison with these fantasies of grandeur. And what we try to do is bring them to a more realistic grip on their circumstances and try to alleviate the unknown, uncertainty, and unsurety of what it is and give them more tools, as many tools as possible when it comes to interviews and when it comes to communication, when it comes to understanding their history of drug use and abuse of substances. And when we give them those tools and they're able to identify what it is that's ahead of them, it really, really helps a person to plan out their future. And it really helps an individual to respond to situations in
a positive way. This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
In a productive way, based upon the history of what it is that we say. Because when I spoke earlier about the abuse that we suffer in prison, and the neglect that we suffer in prison. I can talk to somebody that's been locked up better than somebody out in society. I can talk to somebody that's been locked up because I understand what it is that he's dealing with. I understand the effects of being belittled and being dehumanized. I understand and have seen what it's like to see somebody be demoralized and have that defeated spirit. They need somebody with an understanding ear who understand their experience, who's not only not going to be judgmental, but somebody who is sympathetic towards their plight and understand the history of the pain that they suffered while incarcerated, that they know sincerely cares about them not coming to prison, coming back to prison. Because I don't want to see anybody get out of prison and come back. I don't want to see somebody get out of prison and attack somebody in my family. I don't want to see somebody get out of prison and fall prey to social media and fall prey to keeping up with the Joneses and fall prey to the peer pressures of going back to the lifestyle that they were living when they were living in a self-destructive demolition lifestyle of trying to fit in with other people who are wayward wanderers and lost to themselves, who don't have the positive influences and don't understand the difference between living among some people who embrace them for their positivity and reject their negativity and can identify and see those negative behavior traits. So they can open their eyes and see and actualize their future. We're getting there. We're working hard. Our hearts is in this fight. And once again, I'd like to reach out to Lala. She don't have to respond to us, but I'm saying I'd like her to know that we're doing our part here in Missouri Reentry 2030. And I'd like to applaud her, Lala, for everything that you're doing, and I thank you for everything that you're doing, because each time we help somebody, each time we reach one is enough. It's like the girl who seen the 1,000 crabs that were stuck on the seashore, and the waves kept on washing the crabs back to shore. So she picked up one crab and threw it way out in the ocean past the waves and past the tide so that it could swim out into the ocean. Then she picked up another one and threw it out into the ocean past the waves so that it could swim out into the ocean. And a man walked up and he said, "There's 1,000 crabs out here. How are you going to make a difference when all these crabs are going to just sit up here and die?" And she picked up another crab and she threw that one into the ocean. And she said, "Made a difference for that one." So all we got to do is do our part. And that man, all he had to do is just start picking up crabs and throwing them back with her. So when each one of us do something positive to try and help, and another person see us doing that, it's encouraging to them. It's encouraging somebody else to do their part by our example. So I thank Allah for her example. And I'm going to continue to try and be an example. And Rice Hill is going to continue to be an example. And Jerry Husky and Nicholas Thomas and all the other facilitators that you heard, Zachary Smith. And we're going to continue to keep pushing, keep working until, I'm saying, we bring down the crime rate, do our part to bring down the crime rate in a positive, productive fashion. I thank you very, very much for tuning in. I thank God for the opportunity to speak. And thank you, Leona, for listening to your heart that you were doing and continuing to struggle with doing this good, because it's not always easy. I understand.
Reginald, I'd like to say one thing. Recently, and I know many of you in the audience, and you probably have heard, Reggie, there was a man, Glenn Simmons, who was recently exonerated from prison. He spent 48 years in prison on a crime he did not commit. This is a man 48 years in prison on a crime he did not commit. He's 70 years old now, and this was out of Oklahoma. The man has a GoFundMe page because the maximum that they allow wrongfully convicted people who serve time in Oklahoma to receive is $175,000 in compensation. This is a man that lost his whole youth, his whole life in prison on a crime he did not commit. To be able to get $175,000 compensation. It was on the news a couple of times this week, and you don't hear anything about it, especially now around the holidays. The media is not even talking about it. They want to forget it. This was a 70-year-old black male that spent 48 years in prison on a crime he didn't commit. I want everybody to know the people in prison are not the only ones that have been judged. The people on the outside who were so quick to vote for the death penalty, to vote for life without parole and life sentences, they forget wrongfully convicted were executed, a lot of them, through the death penalty, later to find out that they were innocent. Now, who is responsible for them? People that voted for it are just as guilty as the regular murderers that they claim are violent and criminal. And I just want everybody to know for today, this Christmas holiday, I want everybody to think about what they did if they voted for the death penalty. If they're judging people being behind those bars who are, many of them, who are innocent. I want everybody to know this. Reginald, I've been stealing the show from you all night, all this time that you've been on it. But I just feel this is the time that people need to know that they are just as guilty as many people incarcerated because of those who judge without knowing an individual situation. People that stereotype all prisoners because they're behind prison bars. And I just want the audience to know, if you haven't, I would recommend that everybody say a prayer, say a long prayer, and ask for forgiveness for you who have voted for the death penalty and for you who have judged the incarcerated without a cause and without even knowing their situation. I want everybody to think about it. And Reginald, I'm going to let you close your show. And again, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I had to say some of these things today.
It's very important that people realize that they're just as accountable for the state of anything within this country, and anything that is expressed by this government is expressed by the people for the people. It is the construct of this nation. I thank you all for listening, and I hope that we all do our part to turn things around to a better and brighter tomorrow, to realize the vision of the society that the architect...
Called from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
The architects of the United States Constitution tried to put together higher ideals. Please donate to RC Redemption. That's Reginald Clemens. That stands for Reginald Clemens Redemption. So that I can continue to do my work.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Okay, audience, I believe that's the end of the show. I thank you all for listening in. I don't believe he'll be calling back in again. He may. We'll give it a few minutes. But again, if everybody will please just think about what the New Year resolution is going to be. And I hope that New Year's resolution is going to be to look at prison reform, criminal justice reform, and also looking at ways for these individuals who are incarcerated to get the appropriate rehabilitation that they need, to get the appropriate treatment, to be treated like human beings, and to be looked at as human beings. Each individual case is different. Please do not stereotype the incarcerated, and please do not judge those whom you do not know. And we have, apparently Reginald is calling back one more time, and he will probably be closing in with all of you. And here we go, everyone.
You may start the conversation now.
Okay, he will be closing now.
Yes. And I want everybody to really think about what it is we've been talking about. And I want you to ask yourself, what type of person do you want returned back into society? Do you want somebody that's healed from their childhood wounds, or someone who's been thrashed and their childhood wounds have been exacerbated, made worse, and they're in greater pain? They've internalized nothing but suffering.
making a person or destroying a person. I often say and come to the conclusion that we're going to either rehabilitate people, punish people, or destroy people. And when we really hurt people, what we do is we create somebody that's going to hurt other people. We have to break this cycle of violence, the cycle of abuse, the cycle of domestic violence. We have to break this cycle of addiction. It's not only chemical, but it's also cultural. So let us love one another, each one teach one to live better. Let's embrace one another in our goodness. Let's embrace the goodness of one another and have a more wholesome household. A family that eats together, loves together. And I want to let you all know that I do truly love you, and my heart pours out. And I often cry at the good things that I hear and I see unfold, because the intimacy of truly good, the wholehearted kindness touches my soul. And I thank you all, and I hope and I pray that you all find the peace in your heart and mind that you may be able to share it with others. May God bless you and guide you.
Regin, I hope all of you have a somewhat of a normal Christmas behind those walls. I don't know. I pray for the incarcerated in the morning, and I pray for them at night. And I know that traumatic experiences from childhood have caused a lot of people to be incarcerated, wrongfully convicted. As you know yourself, we have a lot of thousands of people incarcerated who did not commit the crimes they've been accused of. And again, you might want to try to, and I'll try to get the name of that lawyer that represented that Glenn Simmons. And Glenn's name is spelled G-L-Y-N-N Simmons. And maybe there's something that he can do with you or with others that have been wrongfully convicted. But I want to thank you for having this show. I think what you're doing is awesome, you and your team. And I hope that the audience can take some of this away with them and become more sympathetic and more helpful, or willing to be more helpful to those that are incarcerated in the upcoming year.
Thank you, Leona.
We are now going to end this episode. Reginald Clemens will be back on next Monday at 5:30 Eastern Daylight Time. Please do feel free to call in when they come on. They're willing to answer questions, provide feedback, or whatever you might want to bring up while they're on the show. This is an opportunity, audience, for all of you to get involved, at least to learn more about what's going on, learn more about the program they're working on, learn more about their situation, or just let them know your feelings, whether critical or whether more sympathetic. But we welcome you back on next Monday at 5:30 Eastern Daylight Time. Reginald, thank you again for putting on the show, and I look forward to hearing you next Monday.